Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, who is also our world-class greeter. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Joyce.
My name is Joyce. Today I have an understanding that I have an allergy in the body, an obsession of the mind, and a malady of the spirit. I am a true alcoholic. Welcome. Being an alcoholic, I understand that I only have today, and today is the only day I have. I also carry with me the understanding of the insanity of alcoholism. To me, today, insanity means doing the same thing, expecting a different result. Understanding that today, I understand that the only way that I'm going to have serenity is by doing the same thing, expecting the same result. So every day when I wake up, the first thing I do is open my eyes and I do my little woohoo wiggle. Woohoo! I'm alive. I have another day. Can I work the first three steps of this program? I can't, he can, and I will let him. I say a prayer and ask for guidance, and I get out of bed and I start my day by reading my daily meditation. Then I get ready for work, and I always have to stop at my mirror and look because I have a really bad habit of putting on my clothes inside out or on the wrong feet and stuff. So I check myself, and then I look above my mirror. I have this sign, and it says, "Be strong and very courageous." To me today, that means be strong enough to surrender and courageous enough to believe that God won't lead me where His love won't protect me. I read my other sign. It says, "Live beautifully and dream passionately," and I leave my house, flying by the seat of my God pants. Today I understand that my life has to be turned over to the will and care of a power higher than myself. And by doing that, I just be willing to show up and do what I need to do. Generally, I need to go to work, and I can guarantee you at some time during the day, I end up at an AA meeting or talking to another alcoholic. By doing that, I always remember the fact that I'm only one drink away from my next drunk. To me today, I know that I won't make it back from my next drunk. So this is my one shot. So I need to protect myself from the alcoholism disease. Whenever I go to a meeting, I'm reminded of exactly what I am. I'm an alcoholic. And because of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have the life I have today. They tell me in the meetings that most drunks go out and they drink again because they forget with full intensity of their last drunk. That's something I don't ever want to forget as long as I live. For about a year before I actually made it to Alcoholics Anonymous, I tried everything I could to stop drinking. I would wake up in the morning full of remorse. I wasn't going to drink. I'd go to the liquor store if it was a weekend. I'd buy my first bottle of Jack Daniels for the weekend, and I'd drink half of it and decide that I was going to stop. So I go to a gas station. I went to the gas station where the homeless people didn't stay because I thought it was an upscale gas station, and I'd throw my alcohol away. Guarantee you, before too many hours went by in the day, I'd be back at that alcohol, or back at that gas station, pulling my bottle of alcohol out of the trash can because I didn't have any more money to buy any booze, and I couldn't throw it away. So I had to go back and get it. Never really thought that I would end up being a dumpster diver, but I am a dumpster diver. When it came to getting alcohol, I would do whatever it took. I went through my life. I started out with wine, drinking wine out of a box. You know, I really thought it was normal behavior that you went through that box in 2 days and then squeezed the bag, getting all the last bit of it out. After a while, I thought maybe that's not really real. And I was starting to get headaches every morning when I woke up, and I couldn't quite cope. So at that point, I switched to beer. Seemed like a better idea. I didn't have as many headaches. Then I was going through my life. Everything was really fine. And I decided at one point, it was like my moment of clarity, that maybe I should stop drinking after about 18 years of doing that. And because I was actually, you know, pretty functional, I'd go to work all day and I would only drink at night. But it was really starting to cramp my style. So I told my kids, I said, you know, I think I might have a drinking problem. So my son, bless his little heart, was going to be my alcohol police. I couldn't open anything in the house without him looking at what it was, especially Diet Pepsi, because it always sounded like beer to him. So he would come running. I'm like, no, it's Diet Pepsi. Well, I made it through like 3 days like that, and being the really great alcoholic I was, I figured out that I could put my Jack Daniels in my Diet Coke bottle, and then my son wouldn't know what I was drinking because it looked like Diet Pepsi. So that was like the total downhill slide for me. In a matter of probably about a month, I went from, you know, a half a pint of Jack Daniels and a liter of Diet Pepsi to a pint of Jack Daniels by itself. Things got really, really bad, and my biggest problem at that time, though, was that I would drink so I could tell my family what they were doing wrong, because I just was totally, totally certain if they did everything that I told them, that my life would be perfect, and then I probably wouldn't have to drink as much. But I was really introverted, and I had a really, really hard time telling them, so I would drink a little bit so I had the courage to tell them. But by the time they got home, I was like so drunk I'd forget what I was going to tell them. You know, and there were a few times in that time frame of my life that I thought I might be an alcoholic. I took all the tests, you know, I'd go online and I'd answer them all really truthfully, and I would like get one that wasn't right, and I was like, oh great, I'm probably not an alcoholic, because I didn't have to answer yes to one, except I lied about the one I didn't answer yes to. But then I got to the bottom of the test, and it really sucked, because it said if you could answer yes to one or more of these, you might have a drinking problem. I'm like, well shit, I should have read the end first, and I could have lied on all of them. But I really didn't know anything about AA, but in my darkest hours of drinking and crying, and you know, I always had the snot bubbles, it was a really great big mess when I drank and cried. And that always happened after I listened to a really sad country song. And I knew that they knew exactly what was going on in my life. And I would call the AA hotline at those desperate moments. But they would answer, and then they would ask me if I needed help, and then I would hang up, and I guess I just expected they're going to show up kind of like 911, but they never did. So one day I like was totally certain that I was going to fix my whole entire life, because this time I was going to remember exactly what I was mad about. And my family got home, and I said, you know, it's time we talk, because I am really upset, and it's about time that you guys listen to me. And they're all sitting there, it's like, yep, go ahead. And I totally forgot exactly everything I was going to say. I was like, you know what, I really got to go to AA. I'm not sure what they do over there, but I'm sure they can help me stop drinking, because they talk about it on all the movies. And if I go to AA, then I could quit drinking, and I'll remember what I'm going to tell my family, and they'll do what I need them to do, and my life will be perfect. So that was exactly what I was going to do. And this was about May of 2013, and my best thinking at the time was that I would go to a noon meeting, because that way I could do it around my work, and I could be home to take care of my family, and everything would be fine, because I would know what I was going to say when they got there. So I looked through the meeting list, and the first meeting that popped out to me was Bridge Street Drunks. And I'm like, oh, well, that's where I need to go. I'm sure I'm a drunk, because I did answer yes to 9 of those questions, so that's probably where I need to go. So I drive up, and I want you guys to completely understand that I wasn't egotistical, I was not prejudiced, and I definitely knew that my only problem was is that I drank too much. So it was going to be super easy for me. So I drive up to Bridge Street Drunks, and I'm getting a little bit nervous because it was on the north side of town, and my dad was a police officer in town for years, and we were not supposed to go on the north side of town no matter what we did. So I was like, well, I just won't tell my dad. I'm like 47 years old. Like, my dad would even know, you know. I drive up there, and, you know, my totally, like, convinced self that I belonged at Bridge Street Drunks only, and there's, like, all these little old men sitting outside smoking cigarettes at a table, and I'm like, I probably better not go in there because I think you have to share, and there's like no way they're going to understand anything about me, so that probably wouldn't even be fair to them. I might mess up their sobriety, so better find another meeting. So I went to the Alano Club, and that was impressive, to say the very least, at that moment in my life. This guy walking in there with chains, and I was like, oh my God, you know, I also had worked at a police department. I was a little bit afraid of that because I'm like, oh, we might have arrested him. I'm like old enough to be his mother. I'm sure that I wasn't even working there when he got arrested. And Adam he did get arrested. And he certainly wouldn't have seen me because I was in dispatch. So I don't know what I was thinking, but it sounded really smart at that time. So I went to the women's meeting at 7 o'clock. I decided to cramp my style a little bit and cut into my family time and go to a meeting. And imagine my surprise when I actually knew somebody there. And I was shocked shitless because this woman was put together, man. She was like the only person that I knew in my life that could tell me to sit down and shut up, and I did. I was like, man, if she's here, you know what? I probably do need to be here. Because if she could do it, I could do it. Well, I really didn't think I had that much of a problem. And they pass around that little list, you know, and write their phone numbers on it. It's like so super sweet. And they tell you that they want you to call them. And, you know, it was really difficult because I couldn't remember anybody's names. But, you know, it was okay because this one lady had this, like, really funky name. And she was, like, really super nice. So I remembered her, and I just counted clockwise around so I could remember who the names were. And I got my little chip, and I was all fabulous. And, you know, and they were talking about progress, not perfection. I'm like, well, good, I can do this. If they can do it, I could do it. And, you know, I made it all the way home before I drank my bottle of alcohol that night. I'm like, okay, you know what? Progress, not perfection. You know, and then that night I'm crying, going, oh my God, I'm going to have to give back the chip. I didn't earn it. Bad. It was super bad. But, you know, I woke up the next morning remorseful, and I'm like, they said easy does it, so I'm going to just consider this the easy does it. I'm going to do it again. You know, and but I didn't make it to another meeting because I already knew I couldn't go to Bridge Street Drunks, and I certainly couldn't go to the Alano Club, and that was the only women's meeting. So I had to wait, you know, and that was okay, you know, because I could wait, you know, and I made it through like a whole day. So I was like all proud. I could keep my chip. I didn't have to give it back. Made it to the next meeting. They gave me a big book, told me to keep coming back. And I'm like, well, yeah, I do, but you only have this one meeting that I could go to. And they're like, no, there's a whole bunch. I'm like, no, this one seems to work fine. I'll just keep coming to this one, you know. But it didn't work again. I was really kind of surprised. You know, they gave me a big book and everything. That time I thought I had it for sure. The problem was that I didn't hear the part where you're supposed to read the big book. I just thought I was supposed to have it. So went through another week, you know, I'd make it a day or two, and then I'd drink and have to cry, get back my chip, and, you know, I sat and looked at it. It was so pretty, and it was just really sad, you know, and so I was like, okay, you know what, I'm going to make it this time. So went to the meeting, and I was like, you know, probably the whole key is I didn't call anybody on that list, you know, so I probably need to call somebody on that list. And bless her little heart, there was this girl in there, and she was having a really rough time, and she was talking about, you know, that she didn't think she was going to make it, and she was talking about relapsing, and, you know, being the brilliant person I was, I thought I should call her, because that way I could help fix her, because, you know, my only problem was that I just need to quit drinking, and by that point, I had not drank for 3 days, so I probably should call her, that way I could fix her. So I did, and we're talking, and she's like, I'm like, I don't understand what your problem is. I, like, haven't drank for, like, 3 days, and my life is fabulous, you know, and she's like, well, you're just on a pink cloud. You'll get over that. I'm like, okay, well, if I'm going to fall off the pink cloud, I might as well do it right now. So I drank again. And so then my best thinking was, they kept talking about going to a lot of meetings. So maybe I should try a meeting on a Friday, because it seemed like my really hard time was making it through the weekend without drinking. So if I went to a meeting on a Friday, then I could probably make it until the following Tuesday. So that was my best thinking. So I did go to the Alano Club at noon on Friday, and I was just sure that everybody knew I was there because I was totally special, and they were all looking at me, and they're probably wondering why I was there, because it definitely wasn't as bad as them. And I remember the secretary of that meeting was standing up there, and I'm not exactly sure what he actually legitimately said. What I heard him say was, I'm going to pass this basket around again because there's not enough money in here, and you people that have a job should probably contribute for the people that are trying to get a job. Well, I was pissed, quite frankly, because I had come from work on my lunch hour, and I drove up in my car, and who the hell was he to tell me that I should put money in that basket for everybody else in this room? So in my really important way, I got up and I flounced out of that meeting. Well, that Friday or that Saturday, I had the worst drunk I've ever had in my whole entire life. I generally, on Saturdays, it consisted of getting up early to go to the grocery store so I could buy my alcohol and start drinking, and I was usually in a blackout drunk about noon. Well, that Saturday, I was in a blackout drunk about 10, and I'm not sure I really came out of that till about Sunday morning when my son and I were going to go out of town, and bless his little heart, I made him my alcohol police again and told him that we were going out of town, and I couldn't go into a store by myself because I might buy alcohol. So he went with me in every store that we went into to buy a soda or whatever on our trip. And we got home, and I was like, okay, you know what? I'm okay. I got this. My best thinking at the time before I, because I was getting to a point where I was getting a little bit concerned because I was doing a lot of drunk driving before I got to this point. And so my best thinking at the time was I was going to buy my alcohol before I went to work, and I was going to drink a little bit because I didn't want it to expand when I put it in the freezer, but it would already be at home when I got there, so that way I didn't have to buy it on my way home, hence no drunk driving. So that morning I was running a little late. This was Monday after that Friday meeting that was going to save my life, and I was running a little late, so I ended up picking up my bottle of Jack Daniels on my way to work. Well, between Visalia and Tulare, I drank half of that bottle of Jack Daniels. And I took it into my office, and I put it in our freezer at work. And it wasn't unusual. We generally had some alcohol in the office. But I didn't drink theirs. I drank mine because I didn't ever want them to know how much I was drinking. So I put it in the freezer, and I was sitting there, and I'm not exactly sure when the thought hit me, but I thought I might as well go ahead and drink the rest of that Jack Daniels, because all I'm going to do is sit and worry about it, you know, and that it might be getting too cold in the freezer and somebody might notice. So somewhere between 7 and 7:38, I drank the last half of that pint of Jack Daniels. Was in a total blackout drunk at 8 o'clock in the morning at work. I'm not exactly sure what happened, what possessed me to be upset and flounce out of there, but I did. I'm not completely certain that I didn't fall down the steps. I still kind of have a bad hip ache every once in a while that started the day after that. And my body, yes, old age too, I'm kind of thinking. But anyway, my boss happened to be driving up when I was getting ready to pull out, and I guess I was crying. I really don't remember crying, and I was really mad about something, but I'm not sure what I was really mad about. And I do remember him asking me if I wanted him to drive me home. I'm like, no, I'm fine. I just got to leave. I can't be here. And I drove home from Visalia to Tulare, which at that point means that I probably drove down the 99 freeway because that's the only way I ever went home. So I'm pretty sure I would have done that. The only thing I remember about that drive is just little snippets of the road. I remember walking in the house, talking to my son for a minute, and going to bed. About 4 hours later, I woke up and was just horrified. You know, I'd been going to the program enough that I realized at that moment that I could have killed somebody. You know, I obviously wasn't dead because I was awake and had a really bad hangover, but I could have killed somebody else. So I ran out, looked at my car. There were no dents in my car, no scratches. And then I realized, like, oh my God, you know what? I may not even have a job. Because I did remember talking to my boss, and that was the most devastating thought to me at that moment, that I might not have a job, because at that point in my life, my kids were growing up, they didn't need me to the level that they needed me to anymore. I really honestly had no purpose, and my only purpose in life had become drinking and going to my job, so that way I could prove I wasn't an alcoholic, because I had a job, because everybody knows that alcoholics don't have jobs, and they don't have cars, and they don't have places to live, and I had those things, so I wasn't an alcoholic. But now I may not have a job. And so I tried to call my boss, and he didn't answer the first time, and then he answered the second time, and I started in on my total bullshit sob story about how my life was so fucked up and nobody would listen to me, and that was my whole problem. And my boss told me, he said, I don't want to hear your bullshit anymore. He said, you know what, get over it. He said, you need to tell me right now exactly how much time you need off. You can have that amount of time. You need to pull your head out of your ass, and you need to come back to work because I need you. And this is your one shot, so figure it out. And I said, okay, I'll be there tomorrow morning. And at that moment in time when I hung up the phone, my best thinking was, well, I could go ahead and drink for the rest of today and I'll be fine by tomorrow. And I was like, holy shit, you know what? I am insane. I am absolutely, positively insane. Alcohol has made me insane. So at that moment, I picked up that list and I called the lady on the list that scared the shit out of me the most at the meetings. And I did remember where she was because I knew she was not going to buy my bullshit. I asked her if she'd meet with me, and she did. And that's the beauty of this program, is one alcoholic talking to another, be willing to pick up a phone. And I met with her, and we went and had dinner, and she took me to a meeting that night. And I remember, the one thing I remember about that meeting is this girl sitting in the meeting and saying, the coolest thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is when it says in the big books of how people that normally would have never mixed come together. And as I looked around this room, that is the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is no person in this room tonight except the people I brought with me in my car that I knew before I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I look out around this room tonight, I see the people that I dearly love, that understand me, that I would do anything in the world for them, and they show up for me anytime that I really need them. That is something I never, ever had in my life before. And that's what I found here at Alcoholics Anonymous. And I heard that the first night of the meeting when I really could say, my name is Joyce and I'm an alcoholic. So anyway, she told me, the sponsor chick, that was really, really mean. She was really mean, you know, because she didn't understand that part about easy does it. I was like, what is the matter with you? You know, she took me to that meeting, then she took me to a meeting the next night, and then she's going to show up at my house. I'm like, what if that were going to kind of ease into this, you know? I just really need to quit drinking. And she's like, nope, it's not going to work that way. You're going to do what I say, and you're going to go to meetings. And you're like, yeah, but I can't do all the meetings. You know, I really can't, because I have a life, and I have to go to work. I have a lot of jobs. And people expect me to show up there. I just could, like, do this part-time, you know? She's like, no, it's not going to work. So I was like, okay. So we started working the steps, and my life did get better. It really, really did. But I really wasn't putting my whole effort into the program. You know, that part where they say half measures avail us nothing? I'm that person. So anyway, then I had this really brilliant thing that maybe I didn't probably need to go as much as she thought I did. Maybe I just needed to go to the one meeting a week, which happens to be Bridge Street, because on Thanksgiving of that year of 2013, I knew I wasn't going to make it through Thanksgiving unless I went to a meeting before, because otherwise I was going to kill everybody. So the only meeting that was really comfortable for me as far as timing was Bridge Street Drinks Only at 7 o'clock. And I walked into that meeting, and amazingly, I just sat down and acted like I owned the place. I was like, God, you know, this place is pretty comfortable, and some pretty awesome people were there. And I thought, you know, as I look back at that moment, the place I couldn't walk in on that first night is the place that saved my life and where I found my miracle, at the 7 a.m. meeting at the Bridge Street Drunks Only group. So then, you know, I thought I was super special because I went back on Friday and they're like, how long have you been sober? And I said, 6 months. And they're like, oh, good, we need a secretary. I'm like, yes, they recognize my potential. I have arrived. You know, and now my sponsor is going to be super happy because she told me to be a service. And I can tell her I went to 2 meetings this week and I'm a service. She wasn't that impressed, but I was. So then I decided, well, maybe it's just that I'm putting a little bit too much effort into this, because actually I'm kind of thinking they're acting a little bit cultish. You know, they keep telling me that I can only have them as friends and I should only go to their meetings and I should do everything she says. And I'm like, you know, I'm just not quite feeling that. So I think that I'll just, like, do my little service commitment. And by the way, I wasn't as special as I thought I was that they asked me to be the secretary. It was just that all the men wanted to go to the men's meeting. And so there was, like, 3 of us that showed up. But I did show up and make coffee. And I did meet my friend that I now refer to as my angel. And he was always there every Friday, every morning. Every morning he was always there. And he always had some story to say that started teaching me about the real workings of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went to that for about 6 months, and that's all I did. Didn't really read the book, didn't really call anybody, didn't really do anything, but I stayed sober. And I was completely freaking miserable. Absolutely, positively miserable. And I'm like, you know, this isn't working for me, so I'm probably going to need to do something else. So once again, I changed my living situation. By that point, my son and I were living in our own house, The person I was living with had told me prior to that that he had a girlfriend and he was going to have a girlfriend and I probably should move out, which of course was devastating to me because I was drinking all of the money that I could have used for rent. So I told him I couldn't, and I was going to convince him that he really needed me. That's back when I was still drinking. About 8 months into sobriety, that really wasn't working out when I was getting sober, so we did move into my own house. And that was the whole time, you know, I was telling my dad, I'd call him up and say, "Dad, I'm thinking I'm going to flunk out of AA." He's like, "How are you going to flunk out of AA?" I'm like, "Dad, they told me not to make any major life decisions for a year, and I just did." I said, "I moved." And I said, "And I go to this meeting, you know, on Friday mornings, and there's all these, like, super smart people, and they know things from the book, and they know what page it's on, and Dad, I can't remember." My dad's like, "I don't think it matters." I'm like, "I'm thinking it might." But, you know, it really didn't matter because it, and I've come to find out in my life today, it doesn't matter if I know what page it's on in the book. It's just, I know what's in the book, and it works in my life today. Anyway, so I went to those meetings for a while, and when I realized that, you know, it wasn't going to work out, it wasn't working for me really well, I thought maybe I needed to do something different. And so it's like, well, maybe I should actually start working this program of Alcoholics Anonymous a little bit more. And I probably think I need a different sponsor. So I told the sponsor that I was with, I thanked her very much because she actually did save my life, and I can't ever say anything ill about her at all. And then I was like, okay, well, this kind of sucks because I'm not really sure who my sponsor is going to be, but they tell me God will provide. So I went to a meeting, and I ran into this lady that when I first met her, when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I really didn't want to like her. There's really a lot of things about her that I really didn't like, and I tried really hard not to like her. But there was this little inner voice that told me, whatever you do, be really nice to her. So I did. I was really, really super nice to her, but I didn't like her. Well, she was at the meeting that I went to that night when I thought I needed a new sponsor, and we were talking outside after the meeting, which is where any of us know. That's where you have the best meetings, after a meeting, standing in the parking lot. So we were standing out there talking for about 2 hours, and she said to me, she said, "You know, I think this program's working for you because you were very confusing when you got here, and you're starting to make a little bit of sense." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I invited her over to my house, and I asked her if she would be my sponsor. And she says, "Well, what exactly is it that you need help with?" I'm like, "Well, everything, because I just, it's not working. I've been trying it. I, like, went to 3 meetings this week, and it's still not working." She says, "Well, I'll help you, but," she says, "I want you to understand right now, you are responsible for your own sobriety." She says, "I can't make you be sober. I can tell you what I did, and I can't keep you sober." And she says, "You know, if you die, you die." And she left. And I was like, "Well, that isn't quite exactly what I expected when I asked her to be my sponsor. You know, she's supposed to tell me what to do, when to do it, when to wipe my ass. I mean, that's what the first sponsor did, and that wasn't what she did." And I was actually kind of mad. And that whole "if you die, you die" thing, that was a little bit impressive. And I'm like, I thought you're supposed to love me until I love myself, and you didn't. You know, you told me to die. So I was like, wow. You know, but really, that's one of my biggest character defects today, I understand. I really don't like to take responsibility for anything. I would much rather it be somebody else's fault. So by her making my responsibility my own responsibility, it made the hugest difference in the world. And to be honest with you, I had a lot of trouble sleeping for about 3 days. I was like, what is the matter? That little lady comes in and she tells me to be responsible, and now I can't sleep? This sucks worse than before. Well, you know, then it dawned on me, maybe you should read the big book. So, you know, I got my big book out, and I started reading my big book, and everything started falling into place for me. And this lady has been the most incredible person I've ever met my whole entire life. You know, she has taught me so much about myself, things that I didn't know, things that I didn't even believe. It was really, really impressive for me when I came to find out that I actually had a few more problems than just drinking. I actually had a whole life problem. You know, coming to understand understand that I didn't know how to be a good mother. I didn't know how to be a good friend. I didn't even know how to be a really good human being. And that was totally devastating. And through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and learning to live this program in my daily life to the best of my ability, it's made this huge difference. And I'll tell you what, every single morning, go to Bridge Street as much as I can. Now I actually am really busy at work, that I take responsibility for all parts of my life. I do have to show up a little bit more. And but every day I go there, it's like a family and coming home. And when they talk about your home group, that is my home group. And no matter where I go, no matter how many different meetings I go to, when I walk in there, I know I am home. And I totally adore those people. I have names for them all. They don't know them, but I have them. My angel and John Wayne and Hawk and Rock. It's pretty fun in my head, let me tell you. You know, my first sponsor did tell me that the secret to this program is learning to listen to your heart and not your head. My best thinking got me here, and my brain will kill me. I know that every day of my life. I have to listen to my heart and follow my heart. That's where my higher power lives. When I do that, it's just fine. But I have to give my brain something to do because, you know, I need it occasionally in my day, like to do my job, write my bills out, but otherwise I really don't need it. I have to live with my heart. So I give it little games to play, and you know, it does all its stuff. And then sometimes it forgets to turn back on when I need it, and that sucks because I ask stupid questions. Like my friend told me the other day, he's like, "No, I'm not going to be at that meeting. I'm going to Santa Cruz." I'm like, "Oh, really? Where are you going?" He's like, "Santa Cruz, sorry." But yeah, that's kind of one of the hazards of not living with your brain anymore. But it works really well in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the greatest things I heard when I got here and really started paying attention was we have to act our way into right thinking. You know, we can't think our way into right living. We have to We have to act our way into right living. And that was confusing to me at first, but it really works. You know what? If I show up, if I do what I'm supposed to do every single day, things work out just the way they're supposed to be. You know, they talk about it in about a spiritual awakening, and I was like, you know, I probably haven't gotten through my steps yet because that hasn't happened. And I was having this... have to tell a story. I was having this whole problem going on with my son, and I couldn't quite figure out, you know, exactly what the problem was. And, you know, my little angel was telling his story one morning, and he told this story, and it finally hit exactly what I needed to hear at that moment. It was like that whole aha moment, you know. I felt like I was punched in the stomach, and I wanted to cry, and I wanted to laugh, and I was like, and I can't say nothing because everybody is going to think I'm crazy. And I was like, man, this must be a total spiritual awakening, because, you know, I totally get it now. Things are falling into place. And so I went home and I called my sponsor and I said, "I think it happened." And we were talking, and she's like, "Yeah, that's what it was." And I said, "Yeah, but I'm not sure I want to ever do it again." And she's like, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, I didn't really like that whole rush of emotions and everything." I said, "That was a little bit too much." So she said to me in a really brilliant way, she's like, "Well, why don't you think of it as an orgasm?" And I was like, "That I would do again. Absolutely." So I've been waiting. It hasn't quite been as intense as that first one. You know, it's more like a little spiritual awakening, you know, not the way. Because I love my sponsor. I absolutely love her. I told her, I said, you know, it was last year when I was 49. It's like, you know what? I had this whole vision for myself. I was going to be fabulous at 50. I was going to have it all going on. And, you know, I was going to lose 40 pounds. I was going to look like totally super cute. It was going to be great. And that didn't happen. I was telling my sponsor, I said, you know, because I didn't tell her about that part. So I was telling her, it was about a week before my birthday. I said, you know, I had this whole vision that I was going to be fabulous at 50. And I was telling her all about it and everything. And I said, you know, it's really how this program works. You know, it's how we perceive things. You know, my version a year ago was, you know, being a certain size, and that was going to make all the difference. And today I have this true understanding that, you know, today I do know how to be a good person. I do know how to be a good mom. I do know how to be a good friend. I suit up and I show up and I take responsibility for my actions. Today I have my family in my life. I have a wonderful relationship with my dad. Things that I never had before. Now, if that's not fabulous, I don't know what is fabulous. You know, if you're going to judge me by the size of my ass, you probably aren't going to stay in my world very long. Size of my heart's what matters, because that's where my higher power lives. Tell you that I did tell my sponsor, and she says, well, you know, you are healthier. I said, yeah, but you know, I'm gonna have to do a little work on that butt thing because gravity said I'm not sure it won't end up around my knees. So being the good sponsor she is, she sent me the infomercial for the butt bra. Gotta love the sponsors. I got your back, man, for everything. And I'm sure it works, because it was $19.99, and if you bought one that day, you got one for free, just separate shipping and handling. So, you know. But you know, this program really works in so many ways, and you know, so many things that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, they were being taught to me all the time. My dad is this huge, awesome role model that always taught me so many things, like don't take myself seriously. You know, my dad would tell me, he's like, you better get yourself some personality because you do not have it in the looks department. And I'm like, my dad wasn't calling me ugly, but you know what? You can get through anything in life if you have a personality. You know, my dad used to always tell me, don't get mad, get even. And I didn't really, well, actually, I took that in out of context for what he meant when I was drinking. But, you know, I had a lot of things happen in my life in this last year, and I didn't have to drink over them. And several family members die. I was faced with the possibility that the cancer that I had 15 years ago might have returned. Fortunately, it didn't. I remember thinking when I got the news that they had to do more testing, I was really pissed because I'm like, I just got a life and now I'm going to die? That sucks, you know? But yeah, I understood that, you know what, I'm going to live the best that I can because I'm going to die from something someday. And all I have is this 24 hours, and that's how I live today. I'm going to make this the best 24 hours I have because tomorrow's not promised and tomorrow's already gone. But, you know, I had a friend in the program pass away, and I'll tell you, I like to joke about a lot of things because the things that we deal with and the places we've been and the loneliness we've all lived in, if I dwelt on that, I would be crying all the time. But when it comes to being alcoholic and people in need, you know what, that is serious business. This disease will kill us. And I know that. And earlier this year, it took the life of one of my very dear friends. And I was really, really sad and heartbroken. And I was mad. I was really mad. And I went home and I made 3 phone calls. And every person that I called picked up. And I remember the first person, my angel, picked up. And I was bawling. It's like, I just hate alcoholism. I just totally hate it. And I told him what had happened. And we talked for a little bit and talked to my other 2 friends. And, you know, and I was really mad about it and actually was throwing big old fits in my head. And you know, it's like, why is this even worth it? That guy tried so hard and I can't believe he's dead and this is just awful. And you know, as I was laying there on my couch, you know, I was like laying there like really calmly, but inside I was having a whole little baby fit like I do quite often. And I was laying there and you know, my dad's voice came to me and he said, don't get mad, get even. And today I understand that that means, you know what, alcohol doesn't get to take me. I'm going to keep the connection with my higher power. I'm going to live the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to suit up and I'm going to show up and I'm going to help anybody that asks for help, because together we can beat this disease and we can live stronger and we can affect a change. We are sick people trying to get better. That's what we are in Alcoholics Anonymous. We are not... God damn it, I said it wrong. Planned. It was like totally profound. You know what? We are sick people trying to get well. We're not bad people trying to get better. And any time that I forget that, you know what? All I have to do is look at my 2 kids. My 2 kids are here today. They didn't sign up to be children of an alcoholic. They had no choice. They had to be participants in my disease. They get to choose if they want to show up for my recovery. And every time that I look at them, they show up for my recovery. And that's an awesome thing. And Alcoholics Anonymous gave that to me. The last thing I'd like to leave with is, we hear it in meetings quite often, you know, stick with the winners. I really don't like that, because that implies there's losers. And none of us are losers. When you walk in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous and you have a desire to stop drinking, my version of it is you take the place, a piece in the puzzle that our higher power has that creates the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous, one person helping another. You are never a loser in Alcoholics Anonymous. Every one of us is going to reach a different level of surrender. We all have different talents we bring, and that's what makes us strong together. So look for the person that's where you want to be and hang out with them. Find out how they did it. But never, ever think any of you are losers, because just making the step to get here and showing up tonight, that shows me how much you care about me, because you've all participated in my recovery, and I appreciate it very much. Thank you.